It really had to do with the fact that the Rite of Spring was a flashpoint, which brought together an audience of people who were embracing the conventions of 19th century Romantic music, and lots of young, more angry artists who were looking for a progressive kind of music. As Pierre Boulez once said, the Rite of Spring is probably the birth certificate for modernism. It was completely new, broke all of the conventions, embraced the idea of change during a time when the world was changing. You have to remember in 1913 there were things like Einstein's theories of relativity. There were things like psychoanalysis with Freud's theories. Technology was advancing. My goodness, the Titanic in 1912 was meant to be unsinkable and sunk, of course. And the point is everything was changing, and the Rite of Spring was a work which brought all of that together in artistic terms and really changed the 20th century forever thereafter.
Was Stravinsky always a troublemaker?
Well, he was and he wasn't. He certainly grew up as a classicist. You know, he was trained actually not as a musician, but as a lawyer. And the funny thing is, the week of the premiere of The Rite of Spring, he actually spent more time in traffic court fighting a ticket than he did with the rehearsals. But he had a sense of where he wanted to go. He always said that he wasn't an anarchist. He was a revolutionary. That is to say, he saw things that could be changed and new ideas put in its place rather than no ideas whatsoever. But there was always this audacious part of him that made him try new things all throughout his career. I mean, he composed all the way through the 1960s, so it was a very long life, and at every turn there was something new that he was trying out.
Did he become more conventional as he aged, or did convention just catch up to him?
You know, that's an interesting question. He did become, he continued to try new ideas through the 20s and 30s, all the way through the 40s. And then during the 1950s, he embraced a new technique of 12-tone music, which was completely new. And for many people, it alienated them from Stravinsky, because up to that point, he had always disavowed writing like composers like Arnold Schoenberg and others. But shortly after Schoenberg's death, he did embrace this and then went on to compose for another 15, 16 years with these new techniques.
Let's get back to that first opening night back in 1913. Were people not expecting to be challenged, do you think?
That's another interesting question, in that I think they were expecting it. And in fact, to some extent, the riot was more or less orchestrated by others. Oh. That is to say, word had leaked. There was a dress rehearsal the night before on the 28th. And so the critics knew what kind of music was going to be played, and word got out from the musicians who hated the piece and from the dancers who hated the piece. And so word was out there that this was something that was going to be kind of tough to accept. And so when the premiere opened, things were very quiet for the first few seconds. The music began, and you began to hear some rustling of the audiences, and then when the curtain went up and they could actually see the dancers dressed in these garish costumes and the men with bear skins draped over them, they knew that something was afoot here. And at that point, the audience apparently divided in two. And so the riot really was more between the warring factions in the actual audience.
Well, you mentioned dance. Now, this was not just a revolutionary piece of music. It was a revolutionary piece of dance theater, too, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Nijinsky, who had worked with, who knew Stravinsky, was the choreographer chosen by Diaghilev, and he had ideas of modernism as well. Virtually everything that changed with Stravinsky in music also changed at this music and dance as well. We think of dance as being something very romantic, very white tutu-ish. We have to remember that ballets like The Nutcracker and Swan Lake were written not that long before The Rite of Spring. But with this work, and really Stravinsky was the person who was responsible for this as well, asking Nijinsky to try new things, we think of ballet movements as being up, as trying to escape gravity. And The Rite of Spring, everything is down. And so when this curtain went up, rather than seeing these beautiful ballerinas dancing, we saw, as Stravinsky described them, these long-legged, long-braided Lolitas jumping up and down, and the thrust of their movement was always into the ground, which is antithetical to what we think of as ballet trying to escape gravity. Mm. So the dancing, in fact, was very static, very raw. This, after all, was a primitive piece. It was meant to capture the idea of appeasing the gods of spring in prehistoric times. So the dance and music were equally to blame, I guess.
You call this the turning point of 20th century music. What happened after this? Were there people who just went, okay, this is the way to go, and others who said no and pushed back on it?
I think that's right. There certainly were, think of Russian composers such as Rachmaninoff, who continued to embrace a 19th century tradition. But the floodgates were open. This really was a gateway, a threshold, a litmus test. You can use any expression you want. But it really did seem to release the hounds in the sense of people being able to think of music in a different way. And that way was that music did not necessarily have to express pure beauty, but it could express raw kind of emotions. And so music became in many ways and in the hands of many composers, and you can think of other composers from around the time, Bartok, for example, and others, whose music was much more audacious, much more direct in expressing emotions.
Well, let's come forward 100 years. This coming week, it's going to be a new arrangement of this piece at the Arthur Zankel Music Center with the Five Browns. What are you expecting to hear on this thing?
Well, I'm very excited about this. This is a world premiere, and I can give you some idea as to, I think, what's going to happen. We have to remember that The Rite of Spring is an orchestral work and a ballet, but it actually began, as did all of Stravinsky's music, at the piano. That is, most works were drafted for piano duet, and you can think of the reasons for this. Piano duet meaning there were four hands mm-hmm. on one keyboard, and Stravinsky composed that way so that he could actually play and hear the sounds and then use that in a dress rehearsal as well. So if we had two, let's see if I can get the math right. If we had two hands and 88 keys doing this, you can imagine what this is going to be like with 10 hands and 440 keys. Mm-hmm. So that I think what will be captured here is the essence of the sound as Stravinsky first heard it at the keyboard. You know, I remember I had the privilege of studying with Stravinsky's son, Sulima, who was a pianist. And I remember him telling me that he used to camp outside of his father's studio and listen to his father taking one chord and playing it all over the keyboard, trying all different kinds of deployments of these notes. And occasionally he would call his son into the room because he ran out of fingers mm-hmm. and he needed Sulima's fingers to play this as well. So I think when you hear this arrangement by the Five Browns on Wednesday night, you are going to hear something as close to what Stravinsky actually heard as we've ever had the opportunity to do.
Do you think it's something he would have preferred, having it done this way with the five pianos rather than an orchestra?
Well, Stravinsky didn't prefer anything. he was very much in the sense of being suspect of anything that was done with his music. But the truth of the matter is, hearing this piece in black and white, with black and white keys, stripped of its orchestral sound, is actually what people heard at first. One has to remember that The Rite of Spring in its orchestral version was heard in 1913, and then it wasn't heard again until 1921. The work wasn't even published as an orchestral score until 1921. So if you got to know The Rite of Spring, you got to know it as a piano piece.
Well, you're a part of this program Wednesday night, too. What will you be doing?
Well, I have a very little part. I'm sort of the pre-show here. I'm going to be talking a little bit about the history of The Rite of Spring. I play the piano a little bit myself, so I am going to be demonstrating some of the things that Stravinsky first played at the piano so that the audience can hear that and then compare to the performance that comes right after that. The funny thing is that I should also mention that Stravinsky played this as a piano duet before the premiere, and I'll talk about that as well. He actually sat down at the piano with none other than Claude Debussy, and they played it as a four-hand piano duet. And I remember that Debussy is said to have told Stravinsky, "This sounds like a beautiful nightmare." What a wonderful oxymoron. And so we're really looking forward to that. This is a historic moment, not only because this is actually the same day 100 years ago, but this is a chance to hear the music as it was originally conceived and originally heard. And that's something that's quite rare.
Well, let's hope there are no riots and chair throwing
yes,
for you.
I hope so.